I'm Paul Stevenson, and this is Friday. This is Saturday, sorry. Saturday the 13th of May, 2023. You're all very welcome here this afternoon with me. Well, it's the afternoon here in London. 10 a.m. Central and 11 p.m. Eastern, so I guess all of you are in the morning. So good morning, America. That would be the simple way of putting it. In about 15 minutes' time, I will be joined by a guest. I'm going to be talking to the founder and the leader of Patriotic Alternative, Mark Collett, which is a white nationalist movement over here. Obviously, I've actually spoken at the conference that they do. They have an annual conference. I spoke there last year. And I keep in touch regularly with Mark. We also did he put on a camping trip last year. And that was really magical. It really was. The weather was beautiful. The scenery up in the Peak District was beautiful. And we had a 10, 12 mile hike that day as well. So they organize events as well as doing a lot of, good activism and putting leaflets through the door. And they do a lot of great work. And boy, do we need it. This story by The Telegraph that I read a couple of days ago was rather sobering, but not to be unexpected, but it's depressing because, you know, the so-called conservative government have been promising since as long as I can remember of getting immigration under control. And of course, we left the European Union to stop the free movement of people from the European countries, you know, and obviously we weren't having a, you know, massive problem with lots of French and Germans and West European countries. They were all coming from the ex-communist countries, probably 90% of them. And like I've always said, whether you're Indian, whether you're Estonian, Ukrainian, whether you're from the Middle East and a Muslim and an Arab, nothing against you. But it's the sheer scale of immigration in this country which is problematic, to put it mildly. I mean, where I live, it's a pretty civilized area in many ways, but, you know, there's an increasing number of Eastern European accents. Maybe they're Ukrainian, I don't know. They all sound very similar to me. Russian and Ukrainian are fairly similar too, and I do know the Russian accent or the Russian language more than some of the Eastern European language, but there's a lot of Poles around here. And even the shops, the local shop I go into sometimes, all the food's catered for Polish people. And again, need I even bother have to saying it, we all know it's not that you have anything against Arabs or Indians or Eastern Europeans, but it's undesirable to have the sort of influx of numbers of these countries. And I doubt very much whether any of these other countries would like it if suddenly you had millions of British and Irish people arriving on their shores. They wouldn't like it, and it doesn't happen. It's the traffic is always only ever one way. Everyone coming into Europe at the same time. And of course, a lot of the reason we voted to get out of the European Union was to stop this free movement of people. But it's been confirmed that net migration predicted to reach twice, you heard that right, twice the pre-Brexit figures. So we haven't reduced it. In fact, all we've had, I remember after Brexit, the following year, we had the highest level of non-EU immigration, which essentially amounts to brown people from the Middle East and Indians and Africans mostly. And then, of course, recently we've had a huge amount of Ukrainians coming in here, which could have been avoided as well, of course, because we in the West, the United States, and I think we're even worse here in the UK with the hatred of Russia, caused that war. And they're still provoking it and escalating it. We, for example, over here, have just announced that we are sending new long-range missiles to the Ukraine, Storm Shadow missiles. And we'll talk about that as well with Mark Collett. But yeah, the immigration, you know, I spent a lot of time in Milan over the last year, and it's kind of spoiled me. It's ruined me because it grieves me and it causes me pain just looking at the illegal immigration into this country. And just the general immigration and the irrevocable alteration to the demographics. You know, it's miserable to witness and to hear. I mean, honestly, when you hear more foreign accents than you do English people in many parts of London. You know, people who describe themselves white British, not only in London, but in also the two other biggest cities in England, the Birmingham and Manchester, people who describe themselves as white British, in other words, the native population, are a minority now. But I spend a lot of time in Milan, and if I thought I was miserable before here because of the demographics and the rapid shifts that I've witnessed in my own lifetime, and to continue to seeing it only getting worse despite the lies of and the claims and the policies that the Conservatives run on when it comes to immigration to reduce it. Despite that, you witness it growing and growing and growing. And you can see it, you can feel it, you can, you know, it's, as I say, there's more foreign accents every year. But when I went to Milan, you're looking at essentially just white Europeans there. There's very few blacks, there's very few Indians, if any. Well, there must be some, I guess, but they just don't have the sort of Muslim population, the Indians and the African populations that we have. You have majority of Italians, but a lot of Germans, Austrians, and other, you know, white European countries. Imagine that, you know, a European country actually looking like a European country. So it's been more difficult for me since I've been there, because when you come back here, you just notice it. And as I say, it's even worse now for me than it was before I spent a lot of time in Italy. Because I got used to somewhere out there where it actually looked like a European country. But this article in the Telegraph said migration levels could soar to twice the numbers seen before Brexit, the immigration experts have said. So that's what we're looking at now. Twice the numbers. And as I say, Mark Collett will be on in about 5 minutes. And I'll get his, in fact, he's just texted me. We'll get his take on that. I will. But, you know, this is very deliberate by our government. So it's not like it's incompetence. They always like to try and hide behind incompetence, if that's not bad enough. But it's very deliberate because they've changed the goalposts, for example, when it comes to student visas and things like that. They allow more dependents, you know, in other words, the families of students to come. I mean, what the hell do you need your family? When you study, you should just go to another country, study, and go home again. But no. What we have here is you're allowed to bring your family with you, bring the crew with you, you know? So they reckon that net migration, which is the what you're left with after people leave and the people coming in, they reckon it could be as high as 1 million. But this article says 675,000. That's net migration. That's what we'll be adding. Why is it so high? Well, because they're deliberately causing it. But a lot of it is to do with the dependence of students and people coming here to work. We issued last year 490,000 students visas. And after that, you see, they can also, there's also been an additional 135,000 dependents of those students. So they can bring their family. And then once here, under the rules, after that, after they get a degree, they can stay and work here for 2 more years. And at the end of that, 2-year period, they can legally apply for a, quote, skilled worker visa, and they'll basically be here forever because Boris Johnson has reduced, lowered the bar as to what skills you need. And, of course, many of them are here. Maybe they'll get married. Maybe they'll have a child here. Maybe, you know, whatever. They could do that deliberately. Once you get married, have children here, they have rights, they can stay forever. So all very deliberate policies. So I'll talk to Mark about that, and then we'll break down the implications and connotations of this escalation by the UK. And it is a big escalation with sending these long-range missiles, Storm, what are they called? Storm Shadow missiles, they're called. I've never had as much hatred for the British establishment as I do now. It actually, it's at an all-time high, even more so when I grew up in Northern Ireland on the nationalist side. I never hated British people. Obviously, I've got family who are English. But growing up with the war going on in Northern Ireland, I had a lot of hatred for the British establishment and know what these people are capable of, and they're absolute scumbags. And they don't represent the people. And they go around, and now they are putting a target on our back because of Ukraine, that lovely, freedom-loving, democratic, pristine democracy over there, the Ukraine. Right, let's see if we can get Mark on. If we can call Mark and bring him on, he's online on his Skype, so should be ready. Let me just see. I mean, we have the Times newspaper used to be reasonably respected over here. And now they've got a YouTube channel now. And the amount of Russian hatred and just crude propaganda that these people churn out is just, honestly, it's just off the charts, staggering. Is this nonsense about, I mean, the titles here are just so designed to produce hatred, dehumanization of Putin. The recent one is Putin Steals Children. Let's see if we've got Mark with us. Mark, do we have you with us?
You do, and I just came in there to hear that Putin steals children, which I'm pretty much 100% sure that he doesn't. And I would say that that lie goes along with several other lies. It's quite interesting I heard that, because I did a show the other week, I think it was with Dr. Patrick Slattery, and we were saying that there's several lies that are repeatedly told about Putin. One is that the Russian army is about to collapse within 2 weeks. It's always 2 weeks. And since the beginning of this conflict, the Russian army have had 2 weeks before they would collapse, and they still haven't collapsed. One is that Putin is in really, really ill health, and he's either collapsing, having seizures and fits, or pooping himself. And the final lie is always that there's a group of conspirators who are surrounding him and are about to depose him because he's so incredibly unpopular. And these lies keep being sort of recycled at different periods by the sort of British press. And all of them are just completely untrue. And sometimes if you get a really good day, you'll get more than one lie woven together. So Putin will have collapsed down the stairs as the co-conspirators watched, and they were just about to launch their coup, but didn't for some reason. And this latest one about him stealing children is just absolutely laughable. But it does go to show one thing. But the British press are absolutely terrified of this man. They despise him almost as much as they despise sort of white ethno-nationalists such as ourselves, which raises an important series of questions as to what Putin's doing that is so right to make the British press despise him so much.
Well, exactly. I mean, you can almost, sadly, you can almost decide that someone's on the right side of history and is in quotes one of the good guys when you see our media hate them so much, you know, which is sad, really. But there's some truth to that.
Well, if you think about it logically, our media seems to have more time for convicted paedophiles and spends more time trying to convince the public that it's normal for people who have hundreds of thousands or even millions of pictures of underage children on their computers should somehow, and that these two people should somehow get some kind of clemency or are mentally ill or should receive some form of pity from us all. So those people, you know, should be pitied. We should understand them. But people like Putin are absolute monsters that must die at any cost. And that really tells you everything you need to know about the British media. They will push and normalize any form of sickness and madness, even if that falls within, you know, the most, the bracket of the most sick. But if somebody as much as suggests, which Putin has, that the traditional family should be set aside and fenced off as a central pillar of our civilization, that makes a man almost the devil incarnate as far as the British media are concerned.
Yeah. And the irony, of course, is that and the double standards and the lack of reporting on this is that the Ukraine is a hotbed for human trafficking of young children and young women. Douglas McGregor, who I listen to from time to time, said on a show a couple of weeks or a couple of months ago that I don't know where he got this from, but that up to 60,000 children have disappeared from the Ukraine since the beginning of the war. And because of their connections to the pedophilic West, I imagine that young vulnerable children are, and this used to occur in the Soviet Union as well, but I imagine that a lot of young children disappear there and end up in all sorts of horrible, horrible places by Western elites, the Prince Andrews and the Harvey Weinsteins and that ilk, probably have a regular supply of young, pretty blonde girls and boys from the Ukraine. Of course, this gets ignored, and now, I mean, when I first heard the story about the stealing of children and re-education camps, the Russia's come out and, you know, have explained that these children are orphans of the war, and that they're putting them in orphanage and taking care of them. And I actually have seen footage where quite a number of these children have been returned to what those who have had, you know, European or Ukrainian parents still alive, and they've been reunited. They've obviously gotten in touch with them, and so at some point they got separated and they've been returned. So again, I mean, these types of dehumanizing lies, we've seen it in World War II. We've seen the extent of these lies. I mean, there was actually, it went as far as at one point already there was a, when Zelensky visited the British Parliament, I think his wife was on a tour of a, and I kid you not, of a Ukrainian.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Einstein once said, "Future medicine will be the medicine of frequencies." What did he know? Imagine you hear ocean waves caressing a beach, or a favorite song from the past, or the trickle of the babbling brook. All of these are sound frequencies that positively affect us. Terahertz is a soothing, healing frequency that has been proven to resonate at the same frequency as healthy cells. It penetrates the body and stimulates new healthy cell growth. Want to diminish muscle aches, joint pains, and experience a greater sense of well-being? Tired of spending money on short-term remedies that never seem to work? Soothing, healing, relaxing terahertz frequency is now available and as handy as flipping a switch. Terahertz technology is changing the course of what we were taught about how to maintain our health and well-being. To read more about this amazing breakthrough and to order your terahertz frequency wand, go to naturalearthmedicine.com. That's naturalearthmedicine.com.
Hi, and welcome back here to Last Man Standing with me, Paul Stevenson, and I am with founder and leader of Patriotic Alternative, Mark Collett. Mark, you still there?
I certainly am.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, this type of propaganda gets actually embedded into, you know, in our psyches with things like when Zelensky was over at the British Parliament disgracefully. There was an exhibition, for Russian war crimes. This atrocity propaganda is incessant. And the Times are as guilty as anybody, but the Daily Mail are really bad, and so are the Telegraph. And these atrocities...
The Mail are the worst. The Mail are the worst by a country mile. I mean, if you actually look at what the Daily Mail pushes, it borders on war crimes, because you're not meant as a press agency or a newspaper or a media outlet to glorify and sensationalize violence and cruelty. But they do exactly that. They will actually show graphic footage of soldiers in trenches having grenades dropped on them by drones, crying out in pain, you know, their faces literally torn to shreds by shrapnel. And they will be celebrating. This is absolutely disgusting. And these are the same sort of newspapers that if a father in this country, you know, defended their daughter against a gang of migrant rapists, they would be saying, whoa, you know, this guy's gone too far. We can't be endorsing this kind of crazy vigilantism. You know, we don't want a nation of brutes who take the law into their own hands. And on the other side of the fence, they're saying, hey, look at this. Watch these Ukrainians absolutely brutalize Russian POWs, or terrify soldiers who are sleeping in their trench, or blow people to pieces. We should all be cheering this. It's wonderful. And I personally find it absolutely nauseating. And I think some of the things that they're actually reporting certainly do break the Geneva Convention, because they're actually glorifying, in some cases, the abuse of prisoners of war.
Yeah, and like the example you gave, those people and many others are and have been and are accused of inciting hatred, and we must stop hate. But this is a new level of hatred towards Russia, and it's just unashamed. It's just right out there. It's just telling you to hate Russia. And these war crimes, targeting civilian areas, targeting, you know, hospitals, stealing children, taking them to re-education camps, were part of the justification by Ben Wallace recently for sending these new long-range shadow missiles, storm shadow missiles, to Kiev, which are capable, basically, if they want to you know, target well inside Russian territory. And I think they're probably going to be used to target the Crimean bridge in the peninsula there, despite the fact that they're saying, oh, this is just so that, you know, Ukraine can defend itself in its own territory. Have you seen that story where, you know, and the press reported?
Yeah, I've seen it. And I've got to say this. The fact that Britain, at a time when British people are suffering, when we've got this cost of living crisis, when British people are, for the first time in a long while, looking at defaulting on their mortgages, looking at losing everything. We've got rising inflation, rising interest rates, but we're pumping billions and billions of pounds worth of resources into this war without any parliamentary oversight, without any form of vote. It's disgusting. But not only is it disgusting in terms of the financial pain, but it's also insane when you think that we are arming a country that we have no interest in with missiles that can strike one of the three most heavily armed nuclear superpowers on the planet, which could draw us into World War III. This is absolutely insane. No one's voted for this. No, the public haven't been given a chance to give their stamp of authority to it, and it hasn't even been voted on in Parliament.
No, and this is a really serious issue, and this is putting a target on our back. And for what? I mean, what interest do we have in that region? None. And these people are not a member of NATO. They're not a member of the EU. We're not a member of the EU. Well, we may as well be. We can get to that. But, you know, already, and like you say, I mean, right from the beginning, it's been this unchallenged assumption and assertion that we must stand by Ukraine. And no one's ever explained why. And no one's, like you said, ever put a vote to it. But we've already sent munitions over there with depleted uranium heads on them, which have angered the Russians, because that stuff's very dangerous. And, you know, the Kremlin have come out and said this is an extremely hostile act. This is a deliberate escalation, and they have warned of consequences. So that's, you know, and like you said, this is not Iraq or Syria. This is a serious country with, you know, a nuclear, you know, massive nuclear capabilities, and they don't even need nuclear capabilities. They've got huge abilities to do cyber attacks and all sorts. Mark, we're going to break again. Maybe we can miss the break, the final break after that. And now I'll get your thoughts again on that, because, say, the Russians have already come out and have said they're going to retaliate again. I mean, this is just a nightmare, really.
And it's so much bigger than me. It's screaming out.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Black Owl Coffee, and I started Black Owl because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Extendivite, a 7-herb combination of garlic, cayenne, hawthorn, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, valerian, and milk thistle. Extendivite is designed to strengthen the heart and arteries and help the body heal itself. Doctors are not able to explain the improvements they are seeing in their patients' health who are taking Extendivite. People who once needed more pills are now taking less and getting better. Due to the unexplainable improvements in their patients' health, more doctors are calling to order Extendivite for themselves. Help Extendivite make your doctor a believer. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Paudi Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
All right, so we are back. In response to this escalation, the Georgi Muradov, Russia's envoy to Crimea, said London risks, quote, being destroyed for its escalation. Dmitry Peskov of the Kremlin spokesperson said that this will, quote, require an adequate response from our military. And, Mark, the other thing that we saw with COVID, you know, after maybe 6 or 8 months, you started to people come out and question it. Maybe the likes of GB News and some of these other mainstream media like channels, Farage, maybe talk radio. None of these guys, to my mind, maybe Peter Hitchens and a couple of select others. But there is no movement against any of this. It's very strange. It's like we've just lost our fear of World War. I mean, they seem to forget the Cold War when everyone went hysterical, but now it's just whatever, you know.
Well, I would say that the most interesting thing for me is there's this massive ratcheting up of the tensions. And usually at this point, you would at least have the anti-war left saying something or marching or demanding an end to this on humanitarian grounds or on the grounds that, you know, we need to spend this money on resources at home, etc., etc., for the working people, for the working class. And they're not doing it either. And it almost seems as if this is a kind of a bit of a mask-off moment where you've got the warmongering right, Rishi Sunak, Boris Johnson, Theresa May, and they are now openly holding hands with these far-left groups who at any other time would be campaigning against war. And this is being done quite openly. And for a lot of people, this should be a bit of a wake-up call. This should be the moment where people are saying, look, this exposes the fact that there is only one group of people who are campaigning against the establishment. There's only one political force outside of the establishment, and that is ethno-nationalists, because it's the ethno-nationalists or patriotic right that are saying, look, we shouldn't be doing this. We're going in here too deep. We don't have any interest there. We're putting our people at risk. This is all wrong. But both the left and the globalist right are absolutely in lockstep with each other when it comes to this war.
Yeah, as I say, it's very strange. I think it's just there's people out there who think the way we do. Maybe they're just scared to talk about it. I don't know, but I mean, it's, you know, Russia doesn't have to blow up Westminster to cause us problems, but I imagine they're not going to let this keep going. As I say, you know, I think we've been worse than even the Americans. And obviously, again, I don't mean the American people, but we just have this Russia phobia thing running through our institutions. And I guess a lot of it must be the fact that they're descendants of the problems out there among the Jewish community, you know, because I don't think you can really understand it without, you know, you look at Victoria Nuland and some of these people, it has to be a factor. But again, that never gets discussed, you know.
Well, no, when you look at the leading proponents behind this war, you've got the American State Department, who are operating on behalf of what I call the Judeo-American state. And the American State Department is the most Jewish it's ever been. You've also obviously got Zelensky and his regime, which is the most Jewish regime in the whole of Europe. Then you have to factor in that as this war was about to break out, Jews were basically airlifted out of the Ukraine. They left en masse. I've actually got a video out about this called Jews Flee, Whites Die. And as the Jews were fleeing, whites were getting conscripted to fight in this war. So what you've got is a situation where this is largely being done by Jews for Jewish interests, and it's being done without any cost to the Jewish people. The people who are paying the price are white people, white Russians, white Ukrainians, who are being fed into this meat grinder. And the sad thing is, at the end of this, what's going to be left? Well, I believe Russia will be victorious when it comes to taking the parts of the Ukraine they want to take. And I think what will happen afterwards is the Ukraine will need to rebuild. And I think it will be non-white immigrants that will rebuild it. Because as we've seen anywhere in the West, whenever there is a drop in fertility, whenever there is a situation where there aren't enough white people to do jobs, or whites are unwilling to do jobs, who gets brought in to do those jobs? Well, it's coloured immigrants. And I think that this will end up being a situation that ushers in a new age of multiculturalism in the Ukraine as a we're rebuilding campaign. And that is going to be very, very sad. And unfortunately, what you're also going to see is a situation where many, many white men do die, and that's going to leave a population imbalance. There's going to be a lot more Ukrainian ladies that survive this war than men. And whose arms are they going to fall into when these migrants are brought in to rebuild the country? Well, it's obvious. And you're going to see then a massive demographic shift in that country, in much the same way as you've seen one in France, Germany, and of course in the UK.
Yeah. Well, for the Jew, it's a win-win because he's using, you know, the white, the Slavic Ukrainian people as a genocide, essentially, against them to attempt to weaken the Slavic people in Russia. So, it's like you said, they got rid of all the Jews out of there. And but anyway, I've only heard one guy, Phil Giraldi, allude to that fact on an interview with a guy, you know, Judge Napolitano, who basically said there's old grudges there among the you know, the Jewish people in our, you know, institutions and our political constructs, and this is acting out old resentments. It's interesting that Napolitano didn't elaborate on that, because you would have thought it was interesting, but he didn't. But I've contacted Phil Giraldi, and I'm going to have him on the show. He's an ex CIA guy. He's the only one I've heard talk about that in, you know, outside of circles like this, or, you know, people in Patriotic Alternative or whatever, you know. Yeah, the other depressing thing, I was saying, Mark, that I've spent a lot of time in Italy in the last year and in Milan. And it kind of spoiled me a bit. I mean, I was depressed enough about the demographic situation here and the immigration situation here. But after spending so much time in Milan, with a serious lack of Indians, brown people, in blacks, and actually just seeing a lot of white Europeans. It was so refreshing. It's made it more difficult for me to come back here. And then I've, been reading the recent immigration figures, which will be official on the 25th of May, that we're going to be looking at, I think, for the last year. This is legal migration. Net migration is at 675,000. Twice what pre-Brexit levels. This is an article the Telegraph covered. That's the figure they put it. I think the Home Office have even said it might be a million.
Yeah, I think what you've got to look at here is two things. Everyone seems to be focusing to an incredible degree upon illegal immigration. At the moment, all the talk is about the small boats. All the talk is about the illegal migration on our southern border at Dover. But last year, the Conservatives estimated that 52,000 illegal immigrants entered Britain, and that's a huge number of people. But let's say that they're lying, and let's double that. Let's say that 100,000 illegal immigrants, in fact, came to Britain last year. That would be horrendous. But even if you doubled that figure again and said 200,000 illegal immigrants came to Britain last year, that number would still be dwarfed by the number of legal migrants coming to Britain. Because last year, the Conservatives issued 1 million visas. Now, that doesn't mean 1 million people, because a visa is often issued on a family-wide basis. So when they issue over 1 million visas, it's likely that around 2 million people entered Britain legally last year. So as we said, even if you quadrupled the number of illegal migrants coming to Britain, that would still only be a tenth of the legal immigration into Britain. So the illegal immigration is this tip of the iceberg that people are focusing on. And that's drawing people's eyes away from this completely failed Conservative policy of points-based immigration, which has done nothing to reduce migration numbers. But in fact, it's actually increased it exponentially.
Yeah, and it's very deliberate, because, Johnson has lowered the bar when it comes to, the skill level. They've added, I think, in addition to the figures that the Telegraph give, 490,000 students have arrived in 2022, and with them an additional 135,000 dependents. So they're bringing family members. I mean, if you're studying somewhere, what do you need to bring your family for? And then after that, of course, the rules are, if you get a degree, you can stay here and work for two more years. And at the end of that, you can then apply for a skilled worker visa. And again, the skills have been lowered. And you can basically be here forever. And a lot of those people maybe get married, have children, and then they get rights there as well. I mean, I have to say, and I don't mean to be, black-pilled, and it is a factor when I read this, it's so high even since pre-Brexit levels. It's deliberate. And the Conservatives got trounced in the local elections. And then what have we got? We discussed this before. the Conservatives pretend that they want to get immigration under control, do the opposite. But Labour don't even pretend. They're like open borders. Honestly, Mark, I think I'm at the end of my rope. I'll be 50 in 3 years' time, and I don't think I can stay here any longer, to be honest. I've had enough.
Well, look, I've got to disagree with you on one thing. And that's the Conservatives did lose over 1,000 seats. But even after everything they've done, the immigration, COVID, Partygate, the sleaze, inflation, interest rates, cost of living crisis, an unelected Indian prime minister foisted upon us, even after all that, they still came a comfortable second place and were within touching distance of Labour. So this is what makes me think, what the hell is going on? Now, I've got an extensive history with electioneering, and I've written a large article, which is on the Patriotic Alternative website, about the recent elections, giving a full analysis of those elections. And it's actually frightening. So the Conservatives, after everything they've done, still managed to comfortably come second place within touching distance of Labour. And the voters that turned away from the Conservative Party, where did they go? Well, sadly, they went to Labour, the Greens and the Lib Dems, three parties that are even more pro-immigration, even more pro-multiculturalism and even more anti-white than the Conservatives. It's mind-boggling, and you're wondering what needs to change to wake people up.
Yeah, well, what you alluded to there, that, you know, despite everything you outlined negatively about the Conservatives, I think, is it just the repulsion and the fear, the terror of having Labour in that actually garners and allows any support for the Conservatives despite their abysmal record? It must be.
Well, I just don't know. I mean, turnout was extremely low. It was on average between 20-30%, with some wards polling less than a 20% turnout. So it seems that despite the mainstream actually benefiting from this election, most people stayed at home. Some
Not
sort of 75% on average stayed at home, and in some areas over 80% stayed at home. And that's insane. What do we have to do to motivate white people to come out and vote for non-establishment candidates? It's very, very worrying. And I think what we're seeing here, instead of a shift right, which is what we should be experiencing, we're just seeing people wholesale saying, well, that's it. I'm cashing out. I'm done. I'm not voting anymore. I'm just going into my house, hunkering down and saying it's not happening. But that's not going to change things either. That's not an actual solution, which is it's frightening.
Yeah, and also I wonder, you know, when they arrive at the net migration figure, obviously that's who left subtracted from who came in. It'd be interesting to know who's leaving. I wonder, is it white people? You know, because, and I don't mean to sound defeatist, but it's kind of where, and maybe I'm just struggling with it more than usual, but that's kind of where my head's at the minute, you know, because I, you know, around here, you just, it's, and again, I don't need to preface this for my audience or whatever, but it's nothing against Muslims, brown people, Indians, or even Eastern Europeans or whatever, but it's the sheer scale of it. I mean, around here, I've noticed that even in the last year, maybe it's Ukrainians or whatever, but it's just an overwhelming amount of foreign accents all the time. You know, Eastern Europeans, the shops are just selling products for Eastern Europeans and Poles and stuff like that. And it is very tempting to just feel overwhelmed by it, Mark, and think, you know, you've only got one life. Maybe I should get the hell out of here, you know, but because what do we do? I mean, we spoke about this on the phone the other day, because the whole political system here seems to be designed that it's almost impossible to break through for an alternative party, you know? What is the solution to that?
Well, that's the problem. I don't know what the solution is, and I find it absolutely insane that at this point we're in a
bind.
We're in a position where everything's so grave. People are genuinely suffering. Immigration is at a greater level than it's ever been. And there seems to be constant talk from people about how dissatisfied they are, but they won't actually do anything about that dissatisfaction, which is a problem. Because if people are so dissatisfied, we need those people to fundamentally come out and do something. We need people to actually, make a change. Because if they don't make a change, if they're not going to actually come out and, you know, just give us a vote. Because you've got to remember, there were hundreds of non-establishment candidates at these recent elections. And, just take the Reform Party. They stood 471 seats at the recent election. Now, by no means are they a perfect party. They're not ethno-nationalists, but they do speak out about unchecked mass immigration. Yet they didn't win a single seat.
That's Lawrence Fox's crowd, right?
No, that's Reclaim.
Oh, that's Reclaim.
They didn't stand a single candidate.
Oh, yeah, Reform. What's his name?
Richard Tice.
Yeah, Richard Tice. Yeah, yeah. Well, like you say, yeah, they don't. They wouldn't be ethno-nationalists, but they would. Yeah, they would obviously want to curb immigration. I wonder, is it the frustration that you're venting? Is it like the Pink Floyd song in Dark Side of the Moon? You know, hanging on in quiet desperation is the English way. Is that part of it, do you think?
Do you know what? I think the English people, British people, have got a real problem. And there's something in our psyche, this keep calm and carry on, the stiff upper lip, just get on with things kind of attitude. Mm-hmm. And that can be a good thing, but it can also be a bad thing. Because, yes, if you take a couple of knocks, you do need to just get up, dust yourself down and carry on. You know, you can't collapse into a pit of despair and depression at the smallest bump in the road. You know, you have to have some fortitude and some ability just to drive forward. But at some point, if things aren't going correctly, if things are going badly, if, you know, your elected leaders are heaping misery upon you, at some point you've got to say, just like the French do, yeah, hey, enough's enough, we need to take to the streets, or we need to vote somebody else in. Or and for me, I take this as a matter of great pride. I have voted in every election that I have ever been eligible to vote in, and even if I go to the ballot box and put all rubbish across the candidates and cross them all out, I still register the fact that I want to vote, but there is no one to vote for. I still go out there and try to show the system that I'm dissatisfied. And usually I'll vote for any party that isn't part of the mainstream or isn't pro-immigration. So I would vote for UKIP, I'd vote for Reform, I'd vote for the BNP back in the day, obviously, because I was part of that organisation. I'd vote for the English Democrats. And I voted for all of those candidates at one time or another, just to voice my anger at the system. And if they're not there, I'll spoil my ballot paper. And I've always done that. But some people, they just divorce themselves from the entire system. But divorcing yourself from the system doesn't create change. All it does is allow elected representatives who hate us because they're all anti-white to get in with even fewer votes. And at this point, I got to ask myself, and I'm sure you ask yourself this as well, how bad does it have to get to motivate people to at least just go out there and put a cross in a box?
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's a sign of desperation. I don't know. But I actually think, you know, you can correct me if you think I'm wrong on this, but I think the majority of people come here, they come here from, you know, lesser countries, certainly economically disadvantaged, or, you know, less than what they would be here. So in other words, the majority of people come here for a better life. Now, we might be blessed, Mark, if there's a catastrophic economic collapse in this country where people look on and think, well, you know, inflation's through the roof there, the housing market's collapsed, jobs aren't so frequent. Maybe it'll be a good thing. Maybe you'll even see, you know, if with the rising economies, for example, in India and other places around the world with these BRICS nations, if their economies boom, maybe that'll sort something out. And maybe a lot of Indians will decide, all things being equal, we'd rather be in our own native ancestral homelands than be here. What do you think? Or is that, am I being, what's the word? whatever, you know, am I thinking, looking for silver linings when there aren't any?
I think your point is valid, but the problem is, to get to that position where people want to return home because it's too bad here, whites would be in an even worse position, because you and I both know that when it comes down to government spending, local or national, the government will always prioritize the needs of, in inverted commas, minorities, even though those minorities are now majorities in certain cities, sadly enough. And this means that for it to actually get bad enough for Indians, Pakistanis, Africans to say, you know what, we need to pack up and go home, how bad would it be for whites? You know, because if the money's run out to that degree, how much suffering would we endure as a community?
Yeah, I know. I know, but I remember speaking to this about, I think it might have been Euro I spoke with this about, and we sort of almost were in, you know, agreement that we would almost go through that suffering if it meant that the demographics would return to something akin to, you know, what this country should be. Listen, we've got about a couple of minutes left. Do you want to wrap up, Mark, if you want to promote anything with Patriotic
Alternative? No, I just want to say thank you to you, Paul. Thank you for all the hard work you do. Thank you for keeping doing this radio show. And thank you for being one of those voices that hasn't given in. Because over the last sort of, well, since 2016, we've seen this big shift toward nationalism. And then post-Trump, we've seen a lot of people sort of back away, a lot of big content creators disappear, but you've stayed the course. Your radio show is always really compelling. You always have a range of really, really good guests. And I like the fact it's short and to the point. I always enjoy coming on with you. And I just want to say to all your listeners, you know, Paul does an amazing job. And if you value his job and you value RBN, please consider a donation. These guys truly are doing God's work. So thank you for having me on, my friend. And I hope to see you at some point later in the year at one of our events.
Yeah, well, I fully expect to. And I always look forward to the events. And the camping trip was magical last year. And I'm looking forward to that again. And thank you, Mark, for coming on. And again, whatever I do, you're doing 10 times more than I am. And I really respect and admire you for that. And keep up the good work. And thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much, mate. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too. All right, guys, or folks, I'll be back again. Well, I'll be back on Richard Kerry's show, will be on the official narrative on Monday, the 15th at midday central. I think I'm scheduled to be on with David Duke. On what day is it? I don't know. Maybe Tuesday, I think. I'm not sure. And fingers crossed, I'll have Phil Giraldi, the ex-CIA guy, on with me next weekend. Or I might have, because Phil hasn't been well. He was in Eastern Europe, and I think he got COVID. But I might have another guy, Gary DeMar, who's a Christian apologist, coming on as well, if Phil can't make it. So until then, take care. Keep up the good work. Keep up the good fight. And God bless.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today, because you can handle the truth.